Hello and welcome to Oxtalk on Tuesday the 29th of July 2025. My name is Bridget and I'll be compiling this week's edition in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen by Ali Proven and Mandy Wood and read by Ali Proven and Hazel Hobbs. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Oxtalk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Oxtalk online. Additionally, in case it's useful to you, the sunrise times this week will range from 5:20 on Monday, 28th of July, to 5:29 on Sunday, 3rd of August. And the sunset time this week will range from 21 o'clock, Monday, 28th of July, to 20:50 on Sunday, 3rd of August.
Notice to listeners of Oxtalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Oxtalk using Alexa. To listen to Oxtalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Oxtalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.
A popular splash park is to remain open despite the ongoing hosepipe ban. The facility, which is particularly visited during the summer, is in the Lees Park in Whitney and includes water spray jets, water play structures and a rainbow trail themed floor. A hosepipe ban in Oxfordshire has begun after the driest spring in over a century and England's warmest June on record. It is not yet known when it will end. As such, Oxfordshire residents are being asked not to use hosepipes, including for cleaning cars, watering gardens or allotments, filling paddling pools and swimming pools or cleaning windows. However, following what Whitney Town Council termed careful consideration and discussion, a permitted exemption has been made use of to keep the splash park open. Leader of the council, Ruth Smith, said the council has to find the right balance between catering for families in the hot summer and using water as responsibly as everyone needs to. We considered the exemption, the fact the water can be reused, and the new design that only runs when the splash park has visitors. Even so, it will see a reduced schedule opening between 10 a.m. and midday and 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. The council has added that recent improvements have meant the park is more environmentally friendly and that wastewater will be used responsibly, including for maintaining local floral displays.
For 30 years, readers have enjoyed the weekly Memory Lane compiled by John Chipperfield. Here, John tells us how it all began. John writes, It all began with a discussion in the Oxford Mail newsroom. The editor had been to an editor's conference where the message to him and fellow editors had been, start an adult nostalgia column, the readers will love it. The question was, who was going to write it? As the editor and I surveyed the newsroom, we couldn't see any reporter who had been with the Mail for more than a few years. So the editor turned to me and said, I think you'd better do it. Having worked for the Mail for more than 30 years, I suppose I was the prime candidate, but would I have time? I was then news editor in charge of more than 20 reporters and responsible for filling the news pages not only of the Oxford Mail, but the Oxford Times, the Herald Series, the Whitney Gazette and Bicester Advertiser. As my daughter Sarah and son Paul will tell you, I rarely say no to anything. So the job of starting Memory Lane fell to me. My first task was to contact Malcolm Graham, Oxford historian and then head of the Centre of Oxfordshire Studies, who kindly supplied a list of possible subjects. With 3 weeks' articles in the bag, Memory Lane was launched on Wednesday, July the 26, 1995, with a story about the famous, or infamous, Rubber Road in Cornmarket Street, Oxford. A rubber company had produced a revolutionary rubber block which, it claimed, would offer long life, stop vibration and reduce traffic noise. With the promise of a new road surface at no cost, the City Council readily agreed to allow blocks to be laid. The blocks did prove to be long-lasting, from 1937 to 1954, but were lethal in wet weather, with vehicles skidding and shoppers having to scatter. In nearly 2,000 issues, we have brought you stories and pictures about shops, schools, clubs, societies, pubs, bands, shows and much more. We have also featured hundreds of personalities and record many issues and events from Oxfordshire's past. It has been a great pleasure to bring readers their weekly dose of nostalgia. I have had the backup of the wonderful Oxford Mail Library, started by Alex Russell in 1954, and continued through the years by successive librarians, with its thousands of cuttings and pictures from which I have been able to draw. Above all, readers deserve credit for supplying so many of their own memories and photographs. From day one, they search drawers, cupboards and attics for suitable material and have continued to do so ever since. I must also thank the Army at Oxford Mail journalists who, over the years, have skillfully designed the Memory Lane pages with my raw text and pictures. Following a Memory Lane article about the Cadena Cafe recently, people have been reminded of other shops which are graced Cornmarket in Oxford. One of the most popular was Grimley Hughes on the west side near Carfax. It served shoppers for more than a century. It supplied groceries, wines and cooked meats for both the wholesale trade and to personal customers. The shop opened in 1840 and was run for many years by two partners, Owen Grimley and James Hughes. In 1863, the store and neighbouring premises were destroyed in a huge fire. Two men were killed by falling chimney, but the firm was well enough established to resume business within a week. The store had to be rebuilt. The business prospered into the 20th century and opened a chain of small stores in other towns. However, during and after Second World War II, it began to struggle. Post-war austerity and increasing competition from bigger chain stores led to the sale of its Cornmarket site to Littlewoods in 1959. But it was not the same, and in 1963 the shop closed and the name of Grimley Hughes disappeared from Oxford forever. Others record the large Woolworths store that dominated one side of Cornmarket. Originally, it occupied what is now the Boots store on the east side, but in the 1950s, it decided to move across the road. The plan caused a huge row as it meant the demolition of the historic Clarendon Hotel. The move was approved, but there was some comfort for objectors when the hotel's name was revived when Woolworths closed in 1983 and was replaced by the Clarendon Centre. Other readers remembered Marks and Spencer's, Millward Shoe Shop and Fuller's Cafe and Restaurant. And more memories of the Cadira Cafe surfaced. The original article was May the 8th. There was afternoon tea with cream cakes, pianoforte waiters service and the amazing aroma of coffee.
James May says that he has had the busiest year in a decade after cutting ties with Jeremy Clarkson and Richard Hammond. The trio of presenters worked on BBC's Top Gear and Prime Video's The Grand Tour for over two decades together. Their professional relationship came to an end with the finale of the latter motoring show, The Grand Tour, One for the Road. The Prime Video special, released in 2024, saw the famed trio travel to Zimbabwe and Botswana in Africa before calling it a day. In the months following, each presenter has focused on their own work, with Mr. Clarkson opening the Farmer's Dog Pub in the Cotswolds, having purchased the windmill in Astall near Burford for around £1 million. The 65-year-old renovated the spot and opened the doors to the public. The pub featured heavily in the fourth series of Clarkson's Farm, released on Prime Video across May and June of this year. Yet despite his co-star's individual success, Mr. May has now claimed that the past year has been his busiest in a decade. The 62-year-old told the I paper, "I've been thinking about my retirement since I was a teenager. 2025 was going to be my trial retirement year, but I've been accepted to speak at a couple of history festivals and charity events. I've got two TV series, and then I'm doing a live show in Australia, New Zealand, and around the UK. This is the busiest year I've had for about a decade. I haven't had a day off in months."
People living off Botley Road in Oxford are eyeing up space on nearby allotments for a bus turning circle. Network Rail closed Botley Road at the rail bridge in April 2023 for a multi-million pound project to revamp Oxford's train station. The project has suffered repeated delays and the estimated cost has risen from £161 million to £231 million. According to Rail Minister Peter Hendy. To travel up and down the Botley Road, buses have been using two residential roads, Abbey Road and Cripley Road, and Cripley Place, a cul-de-sac, all roads as close to the Botley Road rail bridge as possible to turn round. Last month, they were switched to the Oseney Mead Industrial Estate in nearby Ferry Hinksey Road after a water main burst in Cripley Place. Now the buses have returned to using the Abbey Road route, and residents led by Mr. Levay and Adam Hollis, chairman of the local residents association, say it is not fair to make people in the area put up with noise and vibration caused by the buses for another year. The Botley Road is not new to be reopened at the rail bridge until August 2026. A petition signed by 38 households has now been submitted to Oxfordshire County Council, the Highways Authority and Network Rail, urging them to look at alternative solutions for a bus turning circle. It says, "We now have the prospect of hundreds of buses and other traffic being diverted down our quiet residential cul-de-sac from early morning to late at night for over a year. The strain we are being placed under year after year is intolerable. We know there are alternatives, such as turning buses on part of the allotment, which is currently unusable because the soil is full of rubble. The deal could include restoring it to cultivation afterwards." Mr. Levay and Mr. Hollis visited the £20 meadow site off Botley Road, which is run by Osney, St. Thomas and New Botley Allotment Association, last week. Creating the turning circle would involve cutting a hole in a hedge in Botley Road close to the allotment's entrance gate. A route on allotment land running parallel with Botley Road would then be created for the buses to turn around. Mr. Levay said, "Some of the people who use the allotments are not in favour of this, and we understand that, but we feel desperate. We are facing at least another year of buses travelling past our homes." Mr. Hollis said, "Damage to the hedgerow in Botley Road would be reversible. There would be cutting a discrete gap which could in future be replanted." A Network Rail spokesman said, "Network Rail remains committed to looking at feasible options and will continue to work with stakeholders to ideally find an off-road solution. To support the review of this option, Network Rail has started to work with the Allotment Association."
Warm weather has led to the UK's biggest cherry yield in at least 3 years, a supermarket said, as it introduced larger pack sizes of the fruit due to their abundance. Grower and Tesco supplier Place UK, based in Tunstead near Norwich, Norfolk, said the warm weather had led to a wonderful crop. Tesco has introduced larger 600 gram and 1 kilogram pack sizes of the cherries, priced at £4.50 and £6 respectively. The supermarket said these offer shoppers better value compared to prices at the start of the season and support growers. Dan Yordanoff, head of Fresh at Place UK, said, "It's been a really good season for us so far, with the warmest spring on record, helping to produce a wonderful crop of cherries, easily the best we've seen for at least 3 years."
5 new businesses will open in Oxford as the City Council praises the vibrant city centre. Property consultancy Vale Williams has negotiated the letting of 5 city shops in quick succession and spoke of the high demand for retail premises in the centre. It comes as Oxford was named the city with the 3rd fewest empty shops in the UK, with a vacancy rate of 9%, behind only Cambridge at 8.5% and London at 7.4%. A report from the independent think tank Centre for Cities compared the retail performance of the UK's largest cities and towns, drawing on millions of anonymised card transactions and new estimates of retail vacancy rates. By comparison, the worst performing cities and towns were Newport with a vacancy rate of 19% and Bradford at 18%. Vale Williams partner Mike Watson, who has almost 3 decades' experience in the property market, said, "It's the uniqueness of Oxford. Historic Oxford's brands remains extraordinarily strong. Stock is low, we are generating excellent rents, and we are back to pre-COVID levels." 4 shops were recently let on High Street to Loke Shoemakers, Amethyst Drinks, Patisserie Need and specialist photography business Iris Gallery, as well as Green's Cafe, in New Inn Hall Street. Mr. Watson added, the dearth of shops available to let at present, particularly in the city centre, is testament to the draw of Oxford, which attracts around 8 million visitors a year, and I expect the trend to continue. Oxford was also found to have a high number of shops for the population, of 1.7 per 1,000 people in its relatively small catchment area, more than both Cambridge and London. Centre for Cities said this was likely to be the result of the size of Oxford's visitor economy. Oxford City Council said it's committed to strengthening the city centre's resilience by supporting a sustainable mix of retail, social and cultural activity. Leader of Oxford City Council, Susan Brown, said, Oxford is fortunate to have a strong local economy and beautiful city centre that people from all over the world want to visit. But Oxford City Council also made deliberate choices that have helped boost the city centre. She said decisions like placing the West Gate in the city centre rather than on the edge, building high density homes in the city centre, and encouraging overnight stays with new hotels all contributed to its high street success. Miss Brown added, the city centre constantly changes to reflect national trends away from retail and towards hospitality and experience, but we are also keen to preserve traditional retail and independence alongside. We cannot rest on our laurels, but I'm really pleased to see Oxford reorganised as one of the best performing cities centres in the UK.
The Scottish Government is demanding an apology from UK Environment Secretary Steve Reid for his claims about water quality in Scotland. He claimed that under publicly owned Scottish Water, pollution levels in Scotland are worse than England, to Channel 4 News, as he dismissed calls for water services to be nationalised in England. Gillian Martin, the Scottish Government Secretary for Climate Action and Energy, said that Mr Reid had made the inaccurate and misleading comments regarding performance in Scotland. She wrote to Mr Reid saying, acknowledge that your comments were inaccurate and apologise publicly for making them.
Oxford has been labelled a magnet for bike theft in a new study which has ranked the city second on a list of worst UK places for the crime. The research team at VelociRacks, a company that specialises in bike racks, found there are 6.7 thefts per 1,000 people in Oxford. The study used the latest figures from the Office for National Statistics, ONS, to calculate theft rates. The methodology involved analysing recorded crime data specifically on bicycle thefts covering 301 cities across the UK. Each city was ranked from the worst to the best based on how many thefts occurred relative to the population size, giving a clear picture of where cyclists are most at risk. Despite campaigns encouraging better locking practices and CCTV in some areas, theft remains a persistent issue, the company said. It added, Oxford's university-driven culture and widespread cycling infrastructure make it a magnet for bike use and, unfortunately, bike theft. The cobbled streets may be charming, but they're also littered with stories of missing bikes outside lecture halls and libraries. Areas around Cowley Road, the city centre and university buildings have become trouble spots where bikes are routinely targeted, according to VelociRacks. In March 2022, police raided a house in Littlemore and found a huge pile of stolen bikes. Thames Valley Police has been asked for comment. Matthew Evans, a keen cyclist in Oxford, has had bikes stolen in Cambridge, Oxford and London. He said, On one occasion in London, the thieves used bolt cutters to cut through the D-lock. It cost £110 and was worth more than the bike. I was on my way to a summer ball in Oxford when I spotted someone riding my stolen bike down the high street. I chased after him, but I couldn't catch him. Cyclox, the leading cycling campaign group in Oxford, has been asked for comment. It has previously issued advice to cyclists on both how to prevent bike thefts. The guidance states, no lock is theft-proof. A quick internet search will return many videos demonstrating how your lock could be broken into, but some locks are quicker to break into than others. A gold-rated D-lock will cost you upwards of £25, but it is an essential investment for any bike owner. A D-lock is a lock shaped like a capital letter D, made of strong tubular steel that fits around part of the frame to the wheel. Not only will a D-lock satisfy your insurance provider, if you have one, it will make your bike less convenient to steal than one secured with a cable lock that can be cut through in seconds. You might be able to buy a cable lock for less than a tenner, but if it makes your bike easier to pinch, you'd be better off saving your money. Cambridge ranked first, the worst location, with 8.8 bike thefts per 1,000 people.
Thames Water has asked people to turn off their taps while brushing their teeth as its hosepipe ban gets underway. The water company's hosepipe ban is now in effect across Oxfordshire, the Cotswolds, Wiltshire and parts of Berkshire. It follows the driest spring in more than a century and England's warmest June on record, which has led to Thames Water's Farmall Reservoir being at 95% capacity. This was the last record at the end of June 2025 and doesn't count the heavy rain the county has since experienced. Neville Muncaster, Strategic Water Resources Director at Thames Water, has offered some advice on how to cut water usage along with the hosepipe ban. He said the temporary use ban we announced last week is now in place. I'd like to reassure all our customers that we are doing everything we can to look after our water resources and to protect the environment through this continued warm, dry weather. Our engineers are working 24/7 to maintain supply to all our customers.
Plans to deliver an alternative Cowley Road carnival are being dreamt up by residents. The popular carnival in Oxford was postponed until 2026, having only been held once in the past 5 years. The community is feeling the road is being left behind as a result, alternative carnival frontman Mitchell David said. The 31-year-old from America, who has lived in Cowley Road for the past 3 years, said his carnival proposal is aimed at bringing the community back together. It's an amazing place with great food, great restaurants, international people, he said. It's literally the intersection between the town and the Gown, and there's anywhere in Oxford where that is the case, it's Cowley Road. Under his plans, backed by several businesses, including In Real Life Oxford, the Big Society Pub and the Yard Food Park, the new carnival will go ahead on September the 6th and 7th. In his words, there wouldn't be the big fair rides, but rather an art festival. He would look to get a license for outdoor alcohol sales and food. Something notable can still take place that would drive people to Cowley and introduce them to the new businesses in the area, Mr. David said. He's hoping to get enough businesses on board with his plans to apply some pressure on Oxford City Council to give it the go-ahead. Mr. David added, Long term, my goal is to continue bringing people to Cowley Road through these neighbourhood building activities, finding your people, finding your community. Slowly, over time, that will bring more and more people to the Cowley Road on one hand and get the City Council's attention on the other for more investments or projects. Over last weekend, Mr. David hosted the inaugural Find Your People Summer Fiesta at the Yard, and next month we'll see the introduction of a Summer Cider and Foodie Fest as well. He said he is planning these events for Cowley because he wants to combat loneliness in the area and build a sense of community. Having moved to Oxford 3 years ago, Mr. David admitted he initially struggled to make friends as a newbie. But now, he says, everybody in Cowley Road can recognise him and his dog, giving him confidence with finding partner venues for the alternative carnival. He said, in the UK, between 7 and 10% of all adults describe themselves as being very lonely, which is astronomical. And up to 22% of people under 35 describe themselves as not having close friends, which, compared to our parents' generation, is frightening.
Calls have been made for developers of renewable energy schemes in South Oxfordshire and the Vale of Whitehorse to share benefits with the local communities that host them. Green councillors in the two districts say renewable energy infrastructure should contribute to the well-being and prosperity of nearby residents. South Oxfordshire councillor Ali Gordon-Creed said, "New renewable energy infrastructure has the opportunity to contribute positively to the well-being and prosperity of local residents in the communities hosting projects. There is a great opportunity to deliver for climate and nature and for our residents if we get this right." The Green Party brought forward motions at Vale of Whitehorse District Council on Wednesday, July the 16th, and at South Oxfordshire District Council on Thursday, July the 17th. The motions call on both councils to write to the government and to work with partners and developers to maximise community benefits from renewable energy schemes. Catherine Foxhall, a Green councillor in Vale of Whitehorse, proposed the motion. She said, "As a councillor for Watchfield and Shrivenham, I see every day the enormous contributions that community-owned Westmill wind and solar farms make locally and across Oxfordshire. With its open access approach to land, its events and guided visits."
The housing market has had its biggest July price dip in 20 years as the summer market slows down. Falling by more than £4,500 in July, it has been the biggest average price drop for the month in at least two decades, with a drop-off of activity in the Oxfordshire Cotswolds partly to blame. Rightmove, the property website, reported that across the UK, the average asking price for an average house was £373,700. Whitney is preparing to mark the 80th anniversary of Victory Over Japan, VJ Day, with a programme of remembrance events. The Town Council has announced a series of events to honour the end of the Second World War in the Pacific, 8 decades after Japan surrendered to the Allied forces. The commemorations will take place on Friday, August the 15th, with additional events planned for Sunday, August the 17th. Councillor Joy Aitman, chair of the VJ80 organising group, said, "When we remember VJ Day, we should not just focus on victory, we should remember the terrible devastation of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and hope that the horror of those weapons remains in the conscience of the world. We live in troubled times and we need to focus on peace and harmony. help us create 1,000 paper cranes to symbolise that wish. Thank you to the servicemen and women who were last to return and often experienced untold horrors. You will never be forgotten. The day will begin at 9 a.m. with a special VJ Day cry at the Corn Exchange by the town crier, accompanied by Town Mayor Councillor Andy Bailey and Deputy Lieutenant Ron Spurs. A flag will be raised immediately afterwards at the Town Hall. From 10 a.m. to 4 p.m, Whitney Museum will host a display featuring photographs and books from the collection of the late Whitney war hero Arthur Titherington, a Japanese POW and former chair of the Japanese Labour Camp Survivors Group. At 11 a.m, the Mayor of Whitney will join the Royal British Legion for a wreath laying at the Church Green War Memorial. This will be followed by the reinstatement of a plaque and the placing of tribute flowers on a bench dedicated to Mr. Titherington. A national 2-minute silence will be observed at midday. From midday to 2 p.m, the public are invited to Tower Hill Chapel for refreshments and to learn about Commonwealth war graves, which will be specially decorated for the occasion. Throughout the day, the Royal British Legion will be selling poppies for Market Square. On Sunday, August the 17th, a VJ Day AT civic service will take place at St Mary's Church at 10:45 a.m. In the weeks leading up to the anniversary, community groups have been encouraged to help tidy and decorate war memorials at the Lees, Newland and Church Green. Participating groups will be thanked with a picnic, and both Air and Army cadets are involved in the effort. Knitting and crochet groups are also invited to create peace and remembrance themed postbox toppers, while others in the community are making origami cranes for display. The 1,000 paper cranes are a message of peace. 2-year-old Sadako Sasaki was at home on August the 5th, 1945, when the US dropped the Little Boy atomic bomb over her city. She survived the bombing, but died 10 years later from leukemia, a result of the radiation from the explosion. Japanese folklore says that a crane can live for 1,000 years. And a person who folds paper to make an origami crane for each year of a crane's life will have their wish granted. Sadako folded 1,300 origami cranes before her death in 1955. Her message: this is our cry, this is our prayer, peace in the world.
A special assembly has been held for 2 primary school teachers with more than 40 years experience between them. North Lee CE primary school teachers Rachel Bradfield and Maria Cleal were both celebrated last week for their contributions to the school. Ms. Bradfield, a maths teacher, has been at North Lee for her entire career spanning 30 years. That is long enough that she has taught members of staff when they were at the school and parents of current children on roll. Meanwhile, Ms. Cleal, a science and global learning teacher, has been at North Lee for around 9 years, having previously worked at Queen Emma's in Whitney. At a special ceremony, both were celebrated. With children sharing their memories, teachers performing Dancing Queen by ABBA, and gifts being handed out. A quiz was also held, which was attended by former colleagues and children as well. Alice Joynes' teaching partner called Ms. Bradfield a fantastic teacher and an even better colleague. She said Rachel will be sorely missed.
The cover has been revealed for Philip Pullman's highly anticipated final book in his latest series. The Rose Field, the third and concluding volume in the Book of Dust trilogy, will be published on October the 23rd by David Fickling Books in association with Penguin Random House. The announcement comes 30 years after the release of Northern Lights, the first book in his Dark Materials trilogy. Mr. Pullman, author of the trilogy, said, "I think of The Rose Field as partly a thriller and partly a Bildungsroman, a story of psychological, moral and emotional growth. But it's also a vision. Lyra's world is changing, just as ours is. The power over people's lives, once held by old institutions and governments, is seeping away and reappearing in another form, that of money, capital, development, commerce, exchange. The Rose Field will be released in hardback, trade paperback, ebook, and audiobook formats." Michael Sheen, who has previously narrated Pullman's work, will return as the voice of the audiobook edition. The book will feature new illustrations by Chris Wormell, the official illustrator for both his Dark Materials and The Book of Dust. Mr. Wormell said, "It is 8 years since I began illustrating Philip's wonderful stories and became part of Lyra's much-loved universe through what has been an incredibly special collaborative process. Working with Philip's words has been a joy, and I'm delighted to share the cover for The Rose Field and, with it, a first look at Lyra's final adventure. The Rose Field will conclude the story of Lyra Belacqua, first introduced in readers in 1995. The cover art, revealed on July the 9th, shows Lyra and Ioannidis journeying through the desert of Karamakan atop camels, depicted in Mr. Wormell's signature woodcut style. The book follows Lyra on a dangerous journey in search of her demon Pan and the imagination she has lost. Mr. Pullman will mark the 30th anniversary of Northern Lights with a special in-conversation event at the Royal Geographical Society on Thursday, July the 31st, at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available through waterstones.com. The Book of Dust trilogy expands on the world of his Dark Materials, which has captivated readers for decades and inspired adaptations across stage, screen and radio. The Rose Field is expected to draw significant attention from fans and the literary community alike as it brings Lyra's story to a close. The Book of Dust began with La Belle Sauvage in 2017, followed by The Secret Commonwealth in 2019.
Thames Valley Air Ambulance has answered the 20,000th call out since it became an independent healthcare provider. The milestone marks 7 years of life-saving service since the charity began operating independently in 2018. The number of calls is equal to around two for every person living in Wallingford. Adam Panter, Chief Operating Officer at Thames Valley Air Ambulance, said, "Having seen Wallingford from the sky while on shift in our helicopter, it's quite powerful to know our total number of call-outs now doubles the population of that town. We receive no government or NHS funding, so every single mission we attend is powered by you, the community. It's thanks to you we've been able to load our kit bags and start our engines an amazing 20,000 times since 2018. Bringing critical care directly to the patient. With your help, we'll continue to be there whenever and wherever we're needed, past this milestone and on to the next. The charity delivers advanced pro-hospital care to seriously ill or injured people,
across the region and is currently dispatched an average of 9 times each day. As the summer holidays begin, crews are reminding the public emergencies can affect anyone. A member of staff at a Balls Hill care home has won a Regional Carer of the Year award. Peter de Grossin, who works at Oxford Beaumont Care Community, received the title for the Central Division in the Barchester Care Awards 2025. Mr. de Grossin said, "I'm so grateful for everyone who took the time to vote for me. It's a nice feeling knowing that everything I do is appreciated by not only the residents, but also by families and visitors. The awards celebrate staff who go above and beyond for the 13,500 residents living in Barchester's 267 care homes and private hospitals across the country. This year, more than 5,000 nominations were submitted from homes and hospitals nationwide. Mr. de Grossin will now progress to the national finals where an overall winner will be chosen. Paulina Pronsik's general manager said, "This is an amazing achievement and the whole home is supporting Peter. We are so proud of him." An Oxfordshire man is preparing to cycle from London to Paris to raise money for a cancer support centre. Scott Thomas was inspired to take on the challenge after watching a YouTuber cycle the 300-kilometre route on a free bike that was left out as rubbish. Months later, Mr. Thomas is now in training for the trip, which will take place later this week. He has bought and refurbished 3 second-hand bikes for the journey and will be joined by his work colleague Jordan Beard, his brother Zach and David Zyferth, whom he met at the Broken Spoke shop in Oxford. The 4 riders will be raising money for the Hummingbird Centre, located in Launton, in memory of Mr. Thomas's 2 family members who died from cancer. They are looking to raise £1,000 through a Just Giving page. They are planning to donate their bikes at the end of the ride, in keeping with the YouTuber's trip. The ride will start at the London Eye and finish at the Eiffel Tower.
A youth club has been awarded a grant of nearly £1,000 by a regional housing provider. Rose Hill Junior Youth Club in Oxford has received the £978 grant from Green Square Accord, a not-for-profit affordable housing provider for the Midlands and South West. The grant funding will go towards the youth club's Nature Nurture Nourishment project, which centres on a community allotment set up during the pandemic, which has evolved into a natural wellbeing initiative. The charity says the funding has come at a great time, having seen a 38% increase in families asking for help with food and fuel, poverty amid the cost of living crisis, plus worsening mental and physical health. Fran Gardner, fundraising manager at Rose Hill Junior Youth Club, said, "Spending time in nature reduces stress, enhances memory, and strengthens the immune system. The social aspect also encourages community connections and reduces loneliness. So far, 76% of young people involved in the project reported improved mood and better coping strategies as a result." The Youth Club, a registered charity, was established in 2011 and supports some of Rose Hill and Dittlemore's most disadvantaged families. It runs free after-school sessions for 120 children, offering healthy meals, cooking classes, trips, creative projects, community events, and one-to-one mentoring.
Former Oxford United attacker Billy Bodin has joined the club's rivals, Swindon Town, on a one-year deal. The Swindon-born 33-year-old started his career with his hometown side, later playing for Torquay United, Northampton Town, Bristol Rovers and Preston North End, before linking up with the Ewes in June 2021. He spent 3 years at United, netting 25 goals in 107 games, including 9 goals in 41 matches, as the Ewes won promotion in May 2024. Bodin joined Burton Albion last summer and spent the second half of the season on loan at Reading. He told the Swindon Club website, "It feels amazing to come back to where it all began. Swindon is a club that means a lot to me, and I'm really excited to get started and play in front of the fans again. I feel I have a lot to offer, and I'm ready to give my all for the badge. I always knew when I left, I knew there was somewhere where I would have loved to come back at a certain stage of my career. And after speaking to the manager, now seems the perfect fit and time. This club has a huge place in my heart, and that was a big factor in returning. But the manager was a big part of rejoining too." Gary Rowett was pleased with what he saw from Brodie Spencer after the summer signing made his first appearance in an Oxford United shirt. The 21-year-old played the first half of United's 1-0 friendly victory at Mansfield Town on Tuesday night, featuring at right back, and was then taken off at half time as part of 5 alterations made at the break. Spencer linked up neatly with Stan Mills down the right-hand side for the Ewes and was assured defensively. United head coach Rowett said, "He's a player that's new to the building, so it's taken a little bit of time to find his feet with the players. I thought we could see some really good things and also some areas when he's with us a little bit longer, I think he'll definitely continue to improve. He's a young player. He's very athletic. You see defensively, he's very comfortable and very aggressive. He competes. And like we said before, he adds a lot to what we've got in the building, which I think is very positive." Spencer joined the Ewes for an undisclosed fee from Sky Bet League One side Huddersfield Town earlier this month, becoming United's second summer arrival following the acquisition of midfielder Brian de Keersnaker. A cyclist from Oxford has won a national award for inspiring others to get on their bikes. Stefan Pawlowski received the Rising Star Award at the Celebration of Bikeability event, which recognise individuals and organisations who promote cycling. The awards are run by the Bikeability Trust, which delivers cycle training on behalf of the Department for Transport to almost 6 million children. Mr. Pawlowski's award was presented by cycling author and podcaster Laura Laker, who said, "Cycle training helps give people the skills and confidence to start cycling. There's so many knock-on effects of being able to cycle. Health benefits, exploring the local area. Initially nervous due to ADHD, Stefan found his stride in the people-focused work of cycle training. He lends out his own cycles so children can practice, and his background as a mechanic is invaluable." The awards were presented by well-known figures from the cycling world, including Ed Clancy and Chris Boardman. This year's ceremony took place online on Friday, July the 11th, and reached more than 135,000 users across Bikeability's social media channels. A new interactive 3D installation aiming to transform the traditional shopping experience has been unveiled at Oxford's Westgate Centre. Art and Play is located on Leyden Square and features colourful cubes, archways, slides and cylinders designed to encourage play and imagination. Brendan Hattam, Centre Director at Westgate Oxford, said, "Art and Play is a unique space that brings art, play and community connection to the heart of the city, and we're thrilled to hand it over to our guests to enjoy. As a central part of the Oxford community, we wanted to create an inviting and fun environment where everyone, from families of all ages to students and tourists, can relax, connect and create new memories. We hope our guests will love the vibrant installation as much as we do, and we encourage them to come down to our official launch event to experience the family-friendly fun." The installation was developed in collaboration with CRIA Projects.
Oxfordshire members of the Berkshire Rock Choir visited the 2025 Song and Dance Festival in Estonia. Choir members travelled to the Northern European nation on July the 1st to perform at several locations across the capital city of Tallinn, including the city's beautiful town hall square, before attending the Estonian Song and Dance Festival. Rock choir members from Oxfordshire, Berkshire and Hampshire went on the trip, which choir leader Lucy Hughes called a dream come true. Miss Hughes recounted how their hosts were so delighted with us being there that they gave each of the 120 choir members a jar of locally made honey. The Song and Dance Festival carries immense symbolic weight for Estonia, which was annexed by Stalin in the 1940s and spent decades trapped as a Soviet republic. Estonians use the song festivals as a subtle form of resistance, singing patriotic songs in the complex Estonian language that were hard for the Russian-speaking Soviet authorities to understand or control. This led to the Estonian song, "My Fatherland is My Love," the English translation, becoming a sort of unofficial national anthem sung at the end of every song festival. The energy of the song festivals culminated in the so-called Singing Revolution in 1988, where hundreds of thousands of people gathered on the song festival's grounds to sing patriotic songs and make political demands, playing a significant role in Estonia's return to independence.
A group of puppies have come face to face with a dinosaur during a special training outing. The Future Hearing Dogs visited Oxford University Museum of Natural History as part of their training programme, where they stood nose to bone with Stan the Tyrannosaurus Rex. The visit was designed to expose the puppies to unusual sights and sounds, helping them to build confidence in busy or unexpected environments as they prepare for their roles supporting deaf people. Neha Srivastava, dog training manager at Hearing Dogs for Deaf People, said, "When our pups are accompanying their deaf partners in their everyday lives, they'll come across lots of different sights, sounds and experiences. To make sure they feel relaxed and comfortable in a range of different settings, whether that's a crowded railway station, a hospital, or even a museum full of dinosaurs, we organise visits like this as part of their training. The puppies explored the museum exhibits and posed for photos beside the towering dinosaur skeletons. Miss Srivastava said, "We are so grateful to the museum team for allowing us to visit with the dogs. With all its fascinating exhibits, it's the perfect place for the dogs to practice staying calm, focused and confident no matter what's around them." The charity is currently appealing for more volunteer trainers to help raise and prepare the puppies for their future roles, as demand for hearing dogs continues to rise. Ellie Talbot, Visitor Experience Manager at the museum, said, "It's been brilliant seeing the puppies in the museum today and to be able to support the training for their important work. They seemed unfazed by their encounter with our dinosaurs." She also praised the partnership between the museum and the charity. Ms. Talbot said, "We really value collaboration with organisations such as Hearing Dogs for Deaf People as part of our aim to make the Museum of Natural History accessible to all. We welcome people with all access needs with detailed accessibility information on our website, and our friendly visitor experience team are on hand to support whenever needed. Hearing Dogs for Deaf People is urgently seeking volunteer puppy trainers in Oxfordshire. Anyone interested in volunteering can email volunteer@hearingdogs.org.uk, call 01844 348100, or visit www.hearingdogs.org.uk/volunteer.
Dog lovers in Bicester are being encouraged to become volunteer puppy trainers for a national charity. Hearing Dogs for the Deaf People has expanded its puppy training programme into the town and is now looking for volunteers to help raise and train puppies that will one day support deaf people. The charity trains dogs to alert deaf people to important sounds such as smoke alarms, doorbells and baby monitors. Lisa Meller, volunteering manager at Hearing Dogs for Deaf People, said, "We are absolutely thrilled to be bringing our puppy training programme to Bicester. Our volunteers are at the heart of everything we do, and we're now looking for kind, committed individuals or families in the local area who can offer a loving, temporary home to one of our adorable puppies and help them begin their training journey. No prior experience is needed, just a love of dogs, enough time every day to dedicate to the pup, and a willingness to learn about dog training. The role of a volunteer puppy trainer involves caring for and training a puppy in their home for between 6 and 18 months. Volunteers are responsible for introducing basic commands such as sit, down, and wait, as well as socialising the puppy in a variety of environments. All volunteers receive full support from the charity's dog training team and are provided with everything the puppy needs, including food, toys, bedding and veterinary care." Ms. Meller said, "You'll attend a fun weekly puppy training class, get to meet other people doing the same thing, have all the costs covered and, most importantly, get to train a puppy that will go on to complete transform the life of a deaf person." Karen Hardcastle, an existing volunteer puppy trainer, added, "Becoming a volunteer trainer with Hearing Dogs has changed my life. It's just the best thing I've ever done. To have a dog, to learn a skill, meet lots of people, get out and about, and make a difference to someone else's life. What I've achieved in training these dogs has really boosted my own confidence too. I never thought in a million years I could train a dog, to be an assistance dog, and the feeling is off the scale. When I speak to prospective volunteers, the first thing they say is, I'd love to do it, but I couldn't give the puppy up at the end. Of course you miss the dog you've been training, but a lot of the emotion isn't sadness, it's happiness. To give this life-changing gift to someone you don't know is an amazing feeling.
A group of rescue dogs were treated to ice cream as they kept cool during the recent hot weather. The animals at the Blue Cross Rehoming Centre in Burford enjoyed dog-friendly Puppuccino Pops following a delivery from Marshfield Farm ice cream. Made with reduced lactose milk and free from artificial colours and flavourings, Puppuccino Pops are a new addition to Marshfield Farm's Scoops ice cream for dogs range. Hannah Wiltshire, centre manager at Blue Cross in Burford, said, "We help thousands of dogs every year to find new homes. Some sadly haven't had the best start in life and may never have known the comfort of a loving home. That's why it's so important to give them moments of joy while they're with us. We had a special delivery of dog-friendly ice cream and it was wonderful to see their tails wagging as they tucked into their icy treats. Blue Cross vets have advised owners not to give regular human ice cream to dogs, as many are lactose intolerant and could become unwell. Certain ingredients such as chocolate, raisins and xylitol are also toxic to dogs. However, the charity said dog-friendly alternatives can be enjoyed occasionally." Dawn Hawking, owner of Marshfield Farm Ice Cream, said, "We've loved creating something fun for dogs, but also something that gives back. Partnering with Blue Cross is really special. Every Puppuccino Pop sold helps another dog in need. It's a treat with a real feel-good factor."
Before we finish this episode, Jenny has selected and recorded a poem very appropriate for these summer months. It is called Harvest Embrace.
At this time of year, it's so lovely to see allotments displaying their produce, even if they do look somewhat parched this season. I took up the challenge this year, and now I'm starting to see and taste the fruits of my labours. So I'd like to read you a poem entitled Harvest's Embrace. In rows of green, where sunlight spills, nature's bounty whispers, bends and thrills. Tomatoes ripe with crimson dress, carrots hide in earthly caress. Beans climbing high, reaching for skies, cucumbers glisten, a feast for the eyes. Zucchini dreams stretch wide and far. In this garden bliss, our hearts will spar. Each basket filled, a simple delight, from morning's dew to the starry night. With every harvest, a sweet refrain, nature's bounty, our joy's domain.
Thank you, Jenny, for the lovely poem. That was everything for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496-062280. That is 07496-062280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspaper skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.